We continue with answers to questions. We commence with question number 589, the Honourable Alex Yannick.
Mr. Speaker, can the government provide a list of approved care providers?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Tourism, Equality, Social Services and Housing.
Mr. Speaker, there is no list of approved care providers.
Mr. Speaker, I bring this question to the House. In the last Parliament session, I referred to a press release from a government press release this time I was here, where the Minister for Employment, the former Minister for Employment, had made the suggestion that a number of the schools were being recruited from an approved care provider. And I asked for a list at that point, but because it wasn't actually connected to the organization, I was not able to sustain it. Would the Minister be able to explain why there is a mention of this in a press release, but I'm not able to get down the list?
I'm not aware of the press release of the gentleman is referring to the press release that was issued by the minister, the former Minister for Employment, while obviously a legal press release that it was issued months ago. I cannot be absolutely sure of the exact words that are referred to the press release or not. What the situation is that unlike in the construction industry, for example, wearing my Minister for Housing here, there is a list of approved contractors that the government uses to undertake work. In order to be an approved list of contractors, people have to meet a specific criteria. We don't have an equivalent of that list or that system in place. That doesn't mean that we don't need care providers, whether they're not approved, whether they're being a monitor, as I've explained in previous sessions of Parliament, Mr. Speaker. But technically, it's not an approved list of care providers in the same manner that we have other approved contractors in the government.
Question number 519, the Honourable Alex Yannick.
Mr. Speaker, can the government confirm the full cost of purchasing and installing the flow contractors installed in our beaches?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Tourism, Equality, Social Services and Housing.
Mr. Speaker, I will answer this question together with question 591.
Question number 591, the Honourable Alex Yannick.
Mr. Speaker, can the government explain how many flow contractors are in need of a condition and why the decision to discontinue the use?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Tourism, Equality, Social Services and Housing.
For the total cost to date, since the first attraction was purchased by the Devoted Tourist Board in the financial year 2013-14, is £182,795. Mr. Speaker, the summer season has ended. No floating devices are currently in use.
Mr. Speaker, obviously, I wouldn't expect for the floating attractions to be in use on the first summer season, but I believe they haven't been used throughout this particular summer season. I know that some of them are undergoing repairs and that due to weather. But nevertheless, there is obviously a substantial investment by the government. And I think government should explain why they haven't been used in this particular summer season.
And precisely because it was this government that made this investment in order to provide access to the beach by users with disabilities. So this is a little the government in December 2011. After summer or the summer of 2012, there existed a system for bathing at the beach, which was a pergola at Eastern Beach, which of course is legal that this existed as providing something for people with disabilities. I did not have the time in the first year to be able to improve it, but it gave me a year to lead up to the summer of 2013 and 14, where I worked very closely with my colleague, the then Minister for Tourism, the Honourable Mr. Gessler. And what we did was, in that summer, Mr. Speaker, we invested very heavily in most of the voice features so that they could be completely accessible to people with physical disabilities for the first time in the history of the voice, Mr. Speaker. Now, to make those features accessible for people, Mr. Speaker, we invested in infrastructure. You will recall, Mr. Speaker, that we have new lights at Catherine Bay. We have mobile maps that take you to the future. We invested in all the equipment, and very importantly, Mr. Speaker, we have changing stations, which we call changing stations, which allow people, adults with physical disabilities who cannot, who require a lot of assistance, we have potholes in this place. This is even changing faces. So we have completely revolutionized the way that people with disabilities and elderly people with mobility issues who can fade into voting. Now, Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Gentleman thinks that he can rewrite history because one day this summer, on National Day, one of the flotation devices that we use, which is particularly used by people who are in wheelchairs, to swim on the beach, it was National Day, but that panther, Mr. Speaker, was fixed within half an hour. But of course, the opposition, who didn't really do much by way of assisting people with disabilities, particularly going to the beach, want to make a big solemn dance because at the end of a summer season, because of wear and tear, one of the facilities had a panther. But Mr. Speaker, what this government has done and this government's track record for people with disabilities is unprecedented to the extent that we have physically changed the landscape of Gibraltar, particularly the beaches. And Mr. Speaker, on a particular day, one piece of equipment had a puncture, and it was remedied very, very quickly after. So, Mr. Speaker, that is the state of affairs at the time, at the beach this summer.
Mr. Speaker, unfortunately, I believe the Minister has gone on the defensive and misinterpreted my question. My question is about the floating attractors, the ones that you jump on, not the floating devices to assist people with disabilities.
Mr. Speaker, unfortunately and regrettably, those were all vandalized, Mr. Speaker. Exactly, Mr. Speaker. The government goes and invests in these devices, and every couple of weeks during the summer, we have to get people, lifeguards and sometimes divers, to catch these up, Mr. Speaker, to catch them. And this summer, when we went to get them, they had all been absolutely destroyed, Mr. Speaker. So this massive investment, and I apologize because the answer is in relation to was interpreted in a different question. I don't know how much they cost, how much the investment was initially, but certainly, Mr. Speaker, it's a combination actually of vandalism and some of the beaches which are not protected, then it's because of the exposure to the elements that it's not sustainable and it costs a lot of money to repair and maintain continuously. And while some of the damage is a result of the weather, the majority of the damage, Mr. Speaker, is literally when it's good, is that they've become flat. People go in the middle of the night, or you know, 10 miles or whatever, and flash into the super. It's very sad and it's very regrettable that there are people with malice to that extent, and Mr. Speaker, it isn't feasible to continue.
Madam Speaker, I was completely unaware that that was the situation, and that is the reason why the government has discontinued their use, and obviously, on this side of the house, we can generally say the vandalism. Imposing these attractions, which obviously were imposed by certain members of our community, especially the younger ones.
Question 592, the Honourable Alex Young.
Mr. Speaker, further to written question 47 of 2015, can the government provide an updated schedule together with definition for the term added contained in the previous schedule?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Tourism, Equality, Social Services and Housing.
Mr. Speaker, the term other refers to visitors made up of those accessing the upper locks through the cable car and those visiting the 100-ton gun exhibition. The updated schedule requested is public information and is available online.
The speaker at the time of presenting this question to the Parliament, the information was neither in the same form as the schedules have been provided by Parliament, nor was it updated, so that is the reason why I put this question to Parliament. Otherwise, it would not be wasting her time and money.
Mr. Speaker, I specifically checked, obviously, before answering, preparing the response, when it was answered, at least before the response, and I was told that the information was uploaded online a week before the question was asked.
Question number 593, the Honourable Ella Jones.
Just come back to that question I just wanted to log in. The information provided on the actual website is not the one that I just have been going through Parliament. It's actually consolidated per month and per year. The one I'm always asking for in Parliament since the new policy on the operation of state was a breakdown for public service vehicles, walking tours, and any other tools going up the main freeway. So that is the difference between the federalization parliament and the schedule that is on the government website. So the information is not in the public domain.
I have the schedule that is in the public domain. We wish to have a celebration and we wish to have a celebration. But it's not, Mr. Speaker, the answer that the Honourable Gentleman speaks is not obvious in the question, but if that is what he is speaking, Mr. Speaker, then that's not the issue. The information has been provided in the text, and I am happy to provide it in the request to call, which I am sure that you are doing now, and the information that I can provide.
Mr. Speaker, I've asked for the schedule twice since we started this policy, and I'm actually referring to the written question for December 2016, where the schedule is, I'm asking for an updated one on that schedule. So if I need to actually spell out what is in the schedule, then I will have to, but I think I'm referring to a previous question on a schedule. I don't think I have to spell it out each and every time. So,
question 593, the Honourable Ella Fierman.
Mr. Speaker, can the government provide statistics of how many foreign licensed vehicles have been turned away at the entrance to the Upper Rocks in the UK?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Tourism, Equality, Social Services and Housing.
No, Mr. Speaker, the government is not to be offered in this.
Mr. Speaker, I would like to know how the government actually analyzes sustainable tourism policy. It is not monitoring results and the consequences of this policy. Sustainable tourism is composed of three important factors. It's the economic, the environmental, and it's also the social. And I think governments could have done wise to actually monitor the situation at the point of entry and understood whether the policy that's been implemented is being well received by the tourists. Because, for example, if you take into account which is quite an astonishing, an increase in reviews in a form such as TripAdvisor, which has 70 reviews on the doorstep. The rating is terrible, 35 of which are from the last 6 months. I think government would be wise in monitoring what the situation and the consequences of its policy. I think the social aspect and what people are saying in these public forums should be monitored at inception rather than wait for people to drive up to depot the funds, go to Upper Rock, and then fly to the lower entrance.
Mr. Speaker, the way as it was one at the very beginning before the landing.
Comments analyzing sustainable tourism policy if it is not monitoring the results of the policy.
I should remind honourable members, proper questions is not just to seek information. It is also to urge the government to adopt a certain course of action or a certain policy. And perhaps what the honourable member is after is precisely that. The honourable lady has to know we don't keep such a record, and you are making the point that it is relevant to do so. In that instance, I would suggest that the proper supplementary would be to urge the minister to pursue the line of policy that you would like her to.
No, thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I will explain to him how the government monitors how successful our tourism strategy is. And this, Mr. Speaker, is as a result of an unprecedented investment in our tourism product, and in particular in the nature reserve and in the upper road. And Mr. Speaker, I have the schedule that I was referring to before with the one that I said is available publicly online, and this is the same, Mr. Speaker, that for the last few months, our average number of visitors to the upper road, not our average number, our total number to the upper road, are on average month on month, 10,000 visitors up from the same month last year. Mr. Speaker, so that's all we want to buy. Mr. Speaker, hard facts, hard figures, our tourist numbers are up, our visitor numbers to the Nature Reserve are up.
Mr. Speaker, the numbers may be up, but if you take, for example, every year somebody, and I quote this one, so a driver in Gibraltar in a time-stated car that sells 50% up the walk, but the engine is only available to locals, and you have to just find an alternative route. Bear in mind that they have a busy passport, you have to walk 50 minutes to find loads of cars parked around, and we were left with no alternative but to pay 12 euros to be able to walk home. The only positive out of my trip to Gibraltar was its security. So, even though I appreciate the government looks at its statistics and statistics speak for itself, but I do believe and I would urge government to see beyond the figures and analyze what people are taking back with them and raise the government, change its view, and actually analyze what people are taking back with them home to spread to their families.
Mr. Speaker, I don't know what the Honourable Gentleman is reading, I don't know where it's from, I don't know who reads it, I don't know what date it is. Certainly, of course, there has been a change in policy, and there are people who visit Gibraltar and may be getting used to the new policy. Certainly, the tourist board makes every effort to be able to communicate that policy. On occasions, there may be people who may not read the policy, or may not learn the policy, and find themselves at the risk. But Mr. Speaker, Gibraltar is not the largest country in the world. There will be 3,000 island parks, and they will be able to find other means of accessing the upper road, Mr. Speaker. But, Mr. Speaker, the important thing here is that this government has a very clear vision and a very clear strategy in relation to tourism in Gibraltar, and that it is, particularly in the upper road, sustained. I just want to add to that just one final point. Wherever you go, there will always be good reviews, positive reviews, negative reviews. And so, Mr. Speaker, one is to go to Disneyland and then listen on the various websites where people are given the opportunity to comment. Then I'm sure that among the lots of the positive ones, as indeed we do receive a lot of positive ones about the voter, there will be negative ones. That's life, Mr. Speaker. The world isn't perfect, and we can't please everybody all the time. But of course, if criticisms are brought to our attention, we will always look at them, and we will always try to improve the system. But the figures and the facts show that we are improving, significantly.
Mr. Speaker, on that point, the Honourable Lady has said the figures schools were improving significantly, and indeed she also said that the figures are on the up and up. Mr. Speaker, can I draw the Honourable Lady's attention to the Tourist Survey Report 2015, and in particular page 5, with his tourist expenditure in Gibraltar from 2005 all the way to 2015. And if you look at the amount of money spent by tourists in 2011, it was $279.79 million. Today, it stands at $199 million. It's actually gone up from the 2014, where it dipped at $168 million. Therefore, the figures do not show an up, certainly not in tourist expenditure. And will the Honourable Lady, can the Honourable Lady confirm that some of the decisions that the government has made in relation to the Upper Rock are not keeping into these figures that we see here, or are they attributable to something else?
No, Mr. Speaker, and that question is somewhat far removed from the original question, which relates to visitor numbers in the Upper Rock and whether we monitor people who are turned away, Mr. Speaker, because if we were from that were to follow through to the logical technology, it would be whether people are spending less money on the Upper Rock. What we're looking at is the figures. I'm perfectly aware of the figures. I'm perfectly aware that obviously what we need to do is make sure that our primary objective must be to ensure that we have more visitors to the border. When the visitors come to the border, we need to ensure that they spend as much money in the data as possible. But Mr. Speaker, one thing is the reporting that comes into the report. But I would not, Mr. Speaker, relate that to the policy in relation to the Upper Rock reform. In fact, I don't know which report the Honourable Gentleman is referring to and what the date of that report is. But I doubt that that has any that has any connection with the policy, given that the policy that we're referring to was introduced. And I think that report, I'm not sure which one it is, but it may be that it predates the policy. Therefore, Mr. Speaker, it predates the policy.
Question number 594, the Honourable Ellis Yamas.
Mr. Speaker, does the government have any plans to update and renovate the signs in Gibraltar, in particular tourist sites, parking areas, and last but not least, the Royal Anglian Way suspension bridge?
I answer the Honourable Minister for Tourism, Equality, Social Services and Housing.
Mr. Speaker, signs in Gibraltar are updated and renovated as needed. In respect of the Windsor Bridge, Royal Anglian Way, a new sign has been produced and should be in place in the next year.
Mr. Speaker, I don't know how well they're renovated because some of them are quite appalling due to vandalism, because they're outdated, for whatever reason, but they simply do not seem to be maintained actually. They seem to disappear when they get to the bag and they don't seem to actually be replaced, and I've seen that happen on one occasion. But referring to what I was saying before, when tourists go up the rock and they get turned away and they say, well, you go to a very poor place, they just need to turn back and find parking. One particular place, which is the 1,000 parking space area space in the mid-town, does not actually have a parking space, a parking sign to direct you to. If you come from the frontier, unless it's happened within the last couple of days, but if you come from the frontier, you get directed to Ocean Village parking, and then eventually you get directed to a safe parking area, but there's no sign in between to tell you to turn left at the fraction and parking in that public parking area. So will they actually be updating these signs anytime soon, or are people expected to carry on second guessing and hoping that they have an updated symptom?
Mr. Speaker, as I said originally, signs are updated and renovated as needed. Clearly, when we move to the new car park, and I understand from the Minister of the Council that it is now up to 4 years. it's about to be moved. It's about to be put out. Mr. Speaker, the thing is that when we need signs, it's not like one can go to a supermarket and buy signs, Mr. Speaker. Signs need to go before the planning authority, and they need to be secured, and it's the whole system that needs to be in place, Mr. Speaker. But I understand that it will be in place basically.
Mr. Speaker, of course they're going to go to planning through the planning process, but one would think that if you go to the bridge, you go to the planning process and you do the signing. If you do the unnecessary car park, you go to the planning process and say, look, by the way, I need to sign it. And you implement everything at the same time. So, can we have a date by when the planning will be up?
Mr. Speaker, it's in the process. I understand that it will be ready very soon. But Mr. Speaker, it's actually quite funny because I was in touch with someone who was asking me particularly for a traffic sign, who told me that he's been facing the government for a traffic sign for in excess of 10 years, Mr. Speaker. So while the Honourable Gentleman may wish to pontificate in what he desires in relation to traffic signs, it's something, Mr. Speaker, that seems to be something that historically hasn't been a straightforward. But certainly, Mr. Speaker, I can assure everybody that in terms of, particularly in terms of funding that will impact and assist children, that these are being reviewed, as I said initially, Mr. Speaker, to make sure that we have as fluid a system as possible.
Mr. Speaker, with your leave, I have a supplementary. It is on time, but it relates, and it does relate to the Upper Rock, but it relates more to the previous question. But I think that there is a relevance as well when we're talking about climate to the Upper Rock in general. Mr. Speaker, I obviously live in the Upper Rock. I drive up to the Upper Rock and see the Upper Rock every single day. And I can tell the Honourable Minister that at times it's absolute pandemonium at the entrance to the Upper Rock because of the fact that mainly Spanish registered vehicles get to the Upper Rock, get to the barrier at the Upper Rock, and then they are forced to turn back. And you see, if there were proper signage either at the bottom, at the actual Mount Alvernian sort of entrance, or elsewhere, that foreign registered vehicles cannot drive into the Upper Rock, then it would prevent that kind of pandemonium from occurring. Certainly, it would prevent irate tourists as well that may be seeking, their opinion may be seeking in and are being expressed in TripAdvisor, the Honourable Gentleman alluded to earlier. Because, of course, it's very frustrating to drive all the way up there and then at the barrier be told that you've got to turn back. And a simple sign would deal with that, and I would commend that to the Honourable Minister. Does he not agree with me?
Of course, I agree that we can always look to see to facilitate the process of decision.
Mr. Speaker, if I may. As someone can always be a frustration when you're in a strange town and don't know quite where you're going. Often happened to me in Spain, so I can imagine it's a similar for tourists in Gibraltar, which is quite a small area. Can I just ask if the Minister or the Government will consider actually conducting a review of the signage in general, just to ensure that it is providing tourists with the necessary information and probably at the same time alleviating traffic to some extent by not having them stepping in the middle of the road and causing disruption?
Yes, that is already happening. In fact, I requested one a couple of months ago, and I expect it shortly, but for now I expect it to be moved to my colleagues, the new Minister of Security. But I did request that a while ago because what I want to see is a more holistic approach to this. When it was highlighted to me by this gentleman who's been asking for this sign in excess of 10 years, I was quite funny to tell you that.
Mr. Speaker, you can turn to my supplementary because when I don't, we're not on this side, actually, on this.
politicizing this particular issue. I mean, what we're trying to do is to make constructive suggestions for the improvement of the service. And the Honourable Lady who said yes, we can strive to improve. But the question that I've asked related to the signage for two to be told at any juncture that they're going to be that they can't drive into the SOS. And this is that within the plans of the government to include such signage, either at the bottom of Stamford Close or alternatively well, actually and on the other side, which is the Mount Alvernia side, in order to prevent those kind of things that I've alluded to.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. The question of signage, as I've just said, is part of a wholesale review that I requested. But having said that, Mr. Speaker, the Tory Board did at the outset, when the change of policy was introduced, did employ people to give out leaflets, not only at the entry points for the upper rock, but also at the frontier, and have people actually down the hill in the area where the Honourable Gentleman is referring to, in order to direct tourists to the change of policy, initially when the policy was changed. In terms of the signs, as I said, I commissioned a report to look at a more seamless way of having signage introduced.
Question number 595, the Honourable Ellis Jones.
Mr. Speaker, can the government explain what tools and policies are currently in place and whether these will be clearly set out and updated on its website, places, etc.?
I'll answer the Honourable Minister for Tourism, Equality, Social Services and Housing.
Mr. Speaker, government tools and policies are very clear to attract tourists to Gibraltar. We achieve this by investment in Gibraltar as a destination, which we have at unprecedented levels, by marketing the destination, working with and continuously developing relationships with the industry, and with events-led tourism on which we cooperate with other departments and in particular the Ministry of Culture. Our strategy is working extremely well and the figures speak for themselves. I will forgive the Honourable Gentleman for his clear lack of experience in these matters. It's obvious that it is not normal or customary for such policies to be on a tourist board website or
basis. Obviously, the basic policy that one would expect would not be a hierarchy to get one focus. You wouldn't expect what the minister has just said to actually be on a website that would make common sense to get implemented. But I'm referring to policies such as the Upper Rock Plan, that, for example, when you go to the visit to Walter website, you agree to agree on a quote in the land. No unauthorized private vehicles are permitted in the nature reserve. However, a number of walking, taxi, or bus tours are available. So, this website or this to tell you that you can go walking without having to go on a tour, because it is going to be going on a walking tour. And it's also omitting the fact that if you are in any way disabled and either have a blue bag or just as letter, I don't know exactly what the policy is, that you will be exempt from this policy and you will be able to go in your own vehicle to the upper up. So it's this type of policy, and many of them it may be implemented, but we don't know. So obviously we've got to find out about this policy through disinformation and rumours going around town that this policy is coming to play. And it was nowhere on the website, it was nowhere to be seen. So I'm asking whether these types of policies will be updated and will be made clearer on websites. And I appreciate thinking that I'm being foolish in asking this question, but I'm looking at this from the point of a tourist who goes into the official website and gets this policy to read and doesn't get the full length of the policy.
Will she be updating this anytime soon?
Mr. Speaker, I think I just heard the Honourable Gentleman say that he was reading live from the Tory Board website. It means, therefore, Mr. Speaker, the policy is live on the Tory Board website. the printed website says that no unauthorized vehicles are allowed in the upper world. Clearly, a tool, I don't think it's, you know, that I think it's pretty clear that a tool cannot assume that they are authorized to go into the upper world. The messages on the website need to see that it's very clear. I honestly don't understand. The website is live. So a tool who wanted to go into the Gibraltar website this afternoon, but he wants to go to Gibraltar tomorrow, we have a notification on the website that says that an authorized vehicle is not allowed in the upper.
So, can the Honourable Minister explain how somebody who wants to go hiking up the upper rock is supposed to derive that they can go hiking up the upper rock without having to go clear through the website that you've got clear? And how somebody who is suffering from disabilities or is disabled in any way can be exempt from this policy? That is not either clear or on the website.
I don't understand the first comprehension of the system. Because what the website has is a prohibitive notice relating to vehicles. The company says it's not allowed to walk. I don't understand the first supplementary. And in so far as the second supplementary is considered, there is always an ideal level of information that one wants on a website. But the website also has a place that invites you to contact the tools board if you want any particular details, or an email can be sent, and the details are on the website. If somebody on the website were to use a particular site on the website and wants further information, then that information could be saved, and that information would be available. But having said that the website can have a little bit more information. I look at the website again and see what else you can look to see it's updated, because that's the beauty of a website, Mr. Speaker. It can be updated here very quickly if there's any need for improvement.
Yes, and obviously this is only one form of one way of communicating with tourists abroad, whereas people in Able have access to online with coming with time in the past and coming out, but obviously we find beyond every occasion. But what I'm trying to get at is the wording is not making someone dance on the website of what the policy is. It's the actual wording which says that, however, a number of walking, taxi, or bus tours are available. So that does not, you know, there's nothing in that wording that allows you to interpret that if you want to go walking by yourself, you can still do so. And obviously, I think the disabled exemption should also be on them. Mr. Speaker, I know that we are using our own portfolio being discussed in Parliament, but clearly it's a matter I have an interest in as a new minister for tourism. It just seems to me that the interpretation that the Honourable Member is giving to that is from one. It's talk of walking, talk of taxi, doesn't necessarily have to be a taxi tour, it can be a taxi ride, and then it's talk of bus tours. So the reference to tours is bus tours. So you can go by walking, you can go by taxi, or you can take a bus tour. It's simple, plain language.
I wonder what one can do when one doesn't have any access to websites, like myself, you know. You don't seem to be able to do anything.
Mr. Speaker, the question has been asked in good faith. I now have it in front of me. No unauthorized private vehicles are permitted in the nature of that. However, a number of walking taxi or bus tours are available. I think it is ambiguous. And can the Honourable Lady take it from us that if we find it ambiguous, that somebody who does not understand the English language or the English language being a second language or a third language is also going to find it ambiguous? All we're trying to do is, from this side of the house, is to be helpful in relation to this. We're not trying to catch the Honourable Lady out, and therefore to ask the question, otherwise I'm in breach of the rules. We should at the very least look at this, consider it, and then come to a conclusion based on what we've heard today about whether this is or is not ambiguous.
Mr. Speaker, I said before that things would be looked at, but in relation to reporting or not, because I won't be looking at it. I will leave it to the honourable gentleman to look at in future. But of course, I will, of course. Oh, this honourable gentleman, who is now responsible for the mental health and for the site, Mr. Speaker.
Question 596, the Honourable Alex Young.
Mr. Speaker, what plans does government have to make the visitors.gi website multilingual?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for Tourism and Quality Social Services and Housing.
Mr. Speaker, the website and its content is being reviewed.
Speaker, what plans does government have in terms of when the review will take place, or when the review will come, if it actually go live, or is it in talks with service providers to provide the new platform? How far in the process is government actually involved with the updating the actual site?
Mr. Speaker, I was looking at alternative proposals for the website. I can't give more information on that. Because it is out, it's not been developed that far yet.
Mr. Speaker, I'm able to come back to question 589, the list of approved care providers. The original question asked back in July, sorry, September, was question 484. I asked whether press release 371/2006 could be elaborated a bit further in giving us further details of what government has done in order to create these 50 new care worker vacancies. And the answer from the Honourable Mr. Costa, a government approved care services provider, Grand Home Care, has been engaged in providing at that point in time 20 of the vacancies. So as a result, I asked the supplementary of who were the government approved care service providers, and obviously the minister at that point did not have the information. I said that Minister Hospice, in his reply to my original question, mentioned government approved care services providers. So, knowing that there could be, the reason from the council that there is an approved care service provider list or service, if the minister, if you haven't got the information today, will forward within the next couple of days after the session is over.
No, Mr. Speaker, because my answer doesn't actually change. Because that answer given by Minister Costa is not necessarily incompatible with the answer that I've given. For the same reason that I gave in my answer, and for the same reason that I have given the Parliament in the past. In terms of the mechanics, it's not necessarily a list of endless providers as we have in the construction world, where we may have a list of a variety of people. We know from previous answers we've given in the Parliament before, there are only a couple of service providers to provide care. And what I think is meant by that is that it is approved in terms of the care that is provided for the reasons that I have given in the Parliament in the past, as opposed to having a list of contractors. Is The executive order when it provides care to the government, has an arrangement with the government, and the government has to be satisfied with the level of care that they are providing. And that is what makes them approved. If something were to not satisfy the government in the care, then they would not be approved. And that is the difference, I think, of what is intended as opposed to having a list of care providers. When I say that there isn't a list of care providers, there isn't a list of care providers, because there's a word, or that word in a certain expression doesn't change the answer that I'm doing. It's not that there is a list that exists that I'm not aware of, I'm not familiar with. There isn't a list of care.
So would I be right in saying, in this case, that all care services providers are suddenly approved, and that there are none who are not approved? Speaker, I think part of the reason for the confusion in the point that the Honourable Member is making is that we may be aware that originally the approved contractor list was limited to certain activities, and that earlier this year we extended it effectively to anybody selling or supplying or doing work for the government. That is not approved by the department that uses the contractor. That is approved by the department that had the original list, which originally consisted of construction companies, cleaning companies, and security companies. And I think at one stage I gave the leader the opportunity of the list, and I said to him it was being added to, not because there are more of the same activities, but because there are new activities that are being added to it, in the sense that the logic is, look, given that the original list, which was started by the previous administration, included a condition, for example, that it has to be up to date with the social insurance, up to date with the tax, up to this opportunities in vacancies, so people are already employed, it makes sense to extend it to as many activities as we can, because it's clearly a useful thing to have to monitor whether the people who are being paid by the government are actually paying that duty. But I think that's where the approved list concept comes from.
Mr. Speaker, given that the Minister has said that they will get approved in the sense of the level of care that they provide, and there's only a number of care service providers, I think it would be beneficial for the community, given that there's nobody who regulates them other than government when they use them, that the names be listed as who has been approved as a government care service provider for the sake of those in the community who may think that all of them are approved, and there may be one which is not being used by government the standard of care falls below the level of sector. And I would urge the Minister to provide us with a list of approved, permanent approved care services providers in order to reassure the community that the care provider is very even is also approved by the government, that there is no regulatory authority in the order to regulate these companies. Will the minister look into this and provide Parliament with a schedule of the government's care services provided?
Question number 597, the Honourable Elephant.
Mr. Speaker, can the government explain what the expenditure of Wi-Fi hotspots contained within the government documents for 2016-17 and the tourism and in relation?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Tourism, Equality, Social Services and Housing.
Mr. Speaker, this relates to Wi-Fi hotspots provided at various locations in the data where visitors and residents can access certain websites to see.
Does the Minister have a list of where the hot spots to us.
Peter, we were covered in the recent sitting of the house, but again, the location where we extend tabletop stations and play stations that when they take terminus to terminus is in this year, the point of the rising libraries to both the museum, the Great Chief Thomas, the Master Square, Little Bay, Thomas Castle, and the Tanzanians, and various people of Sea Sands in both United States. And the websites that can be accessed are the Gibraltar Bus Library, the Airport Government of Gibraltar, the Gibraltar Bus Company, the Gibraltar City Authority.
Question number 598, the Honourable Ellis Young.
To the Speaker, does the government have any plans to update its plan to provide accessibility maps for persons with disabilities on how to move around in the data?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for Tourism, Equality, Social Services and Health.
Mr. Speaker, the Department of Equality is already working on a holistic program with the Gibraltar Police Force and the Technical Services Department.
Does the Minister have any idea whether the plan will be implemented before Christmas, like the Christmas in 2017 is announced the timeline?
If you see that's part of the bigger accessibility project, so it's unlikely to happen before Christmas, but it will happen as soon as it can possibly happen.
Question number 599, the Honourable Ellis Young.
Can the government explain what the expenditure of stock mobility contract contains within the government estimate for 2016-17 and the tourism and the relationship?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for Tourism, Quality, Social Services and Health.
Mr. Speaker, this relates to a maintenance contract for the provision of what was previously provided at the stock mobility centre.
Question number 600, the Honourable E.J. Hagan.
I think that can the Minister for Housing provide details of how many rental homes have been allocated and or assigned by government, inclusive of room composition of said homes, from the stock return by purchases of both non-specialties and institution services?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for Tourism, Quality, Social Services and Health.
Mr. Speaker, 16 sets have already been allocated or assigned by government from the stock return by purchases of both on Spike and Eve and BC Charity. The room composition is as follows: 6 PRKVs, 8 PRKVs, and 2 PRKVs.
Mr. Speaker, is the Minister aware, is there still any other government rental homes to be returned because we've reported the filling approaches in that? And is that the case? You know, that we have an approximate estimate whether it's going to be, you know, just a small handful or only 30?
There are more than 15 that are returning. I think that because the question was in relation to those allocated for their time, more have been returned, but they're in the process of being cleaned and refurbished. Now, I don't think that they are, off the top of my head, I don't think that they are, I think most people have completed, maybe there are a couple who haven't completed, I don't think that they will be returning more to the housing stock, but this is a different question. There are more coming into the housing stock, but not because of completion, because they're still in the pipeline, they're being refurbished and they're being seen.
Question number 601, the Honourable E.J. Hayes.
Does any Minister of Housing provide details of how many tenants required urban security from their homes since the 1st of April 2016, indicating the reason why, the date when such security became necessary, and the date when the tenants were able to return to their homes?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for Tourism, Equality, Social Services and Health.
Mr. Speaker, since the 1st of April, 6 tenants have required urban decanting from their homes, one is 1 June July, 1 December, and 2 October. 5 as a result of flooding and 1 as a result of a flood or a fire. One tenant returned to the flat in June, 2 returned in July, and 1 in September. And there were 2 tenants in currently in hotel accommodation.
Hello, I'm a speaker. The decision that the flat and the homes are required to be returned to their emerging places, who certifies or who decides when the set home is ready to return? Because there seems to be, I'm not trying to have them, I'm trying to come to the end of television, but there seems time to be tenants to say, government has said the central accommodation is going to cease to be available for me after Friday, they want me to move back. But yet, they claim that the housing officials over there have still not been able to sort of sign the paper, sort of certifying that the housing now suitable, rehabitable, and some are claiming that the electricity supply is not available and so on. Is there someone or system whereby certain certificates of re-fitness when education is available? Does the minister have some information about this sector really?
To get the situation that the Honourable Gentleman is alluding to very unusual, because what we do is, in the normal course of things, because we're talking about repairs, regardless of the reason for the repairs, whether it's become to or not. So repairs will be sent to be repaired, whether it's by the head of the agency or by the subcontractor, depending on what are required. And once the works are completed, and they will then be certified by the inspector and the housing department, then the person will actually move back in. It is the housing department that detents the person and provides them with permissive accommodation. If the housing department has now remedied any defects in the flat and the premises, then the person will be asked to move in. You won't go into one without the other. You cannot, if you have defended the person, you cannot force the person back in unless the premises are fit for them to return. And so clearly, as the same person, the defense is a fit and the person needs to return. But then that's an internal process that will be dealt with by the inspector and then by the housing manager. But I've never heard of any gap in between.
Well, the gaps what I've heard is we're talking about urgent security, right? So I think the minister gave me the good example before. Flooding or fire, things that are unexpected, it happens, we appeal or we react on humanitarian grounds, we resettle the family, we carry out the repair work. There are plenty, and I asked the question to speaker because over the course of the last few months, there's been more than one. They say, I've been told that I can go back, but my house still hasn't had a thing to apply because no one has certified that the rest of the purchase is now available for use and so on. And I'm trying to determine, so that I can, in many ways, I can work alongside the honourable lady for when the different cities come up to the table. Is there someone who ultimately has to sign some communication when I'm in construction, when I'm minister of the and certainly guys in this one, when I'm in construction, someone has to sign and say, right, we certified, there's now methods and business and so on, we accept it, and then therefore the houses can be issued. I'm trying to apply a similar for the situation in these cases where unfortunately urgency requires them to be defensive. And some tenants are claiming are being pushed back because they say no, the accommodation has is only temporary, that has to be returned to the stuff and so on. All is acceptable, but ultimately, whose responsibility is it for standing on a given dotted line to be saying this house is now in condition where you can move?
Mr. Speaker, any work has verified, certified, on behalf of the housing work agency. I certainly have never been called because of a situation like that, but if something odd like that were to arise, then I would ask one of the gentlemen to call me and call it a conversation. But certainly nothing of that nature has been brought to my attention. Maybe the company's department will slip somewhere along the line, but that's certainly not the policy and not the practice as far as I'm aware. Maybe that is, there may be an exception that may not happen to somebody who went to see the Honourable Gentleman instead of going to the department to get a report of it. But surely, I said, Honourable Gentleman, well, I'm happy to work with you, this doesn't happen.
The Honourable Minister has said, she's still a type of situation, I can then approach that, so I think that's the second matter for today, and we'll continue working jointly for the benefit of tenants and residents.
Question number 602, the Honourable E.J. Hurley.
Can the Minister for Housing say how much expenditure has been incurred in respect of legal costs relating to the eviction of cottage and diamond rental homes since the 1st of April 2016, providing a breakdown showing the number of homes involved and to whom payments were made?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Tourism, Quality, Social Services and Housing.
The Speaker, since the 1st of April 2016, a total of £2,585 has been paid to the landowner in respect of five of its constituents.
Question number 603, the Honourable E.J. Hay.
Can the Minister for Housing provide details in respect of pending repairs to rental homes, indicating the dates in these reports were made for tenants and stating how many will be repaired by A, the Housing Works Agency, B, subcontractors, and C, the assigned tenants themselves?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Tourism, Quality, Social Services and Health.
There are currently 273 pending repairs to rental homes. The date in which these were reported were as follows: they were 28 in May, 42 in June, 45 in July, 40 in August, 47 in September, and 81 in October. 27 of these will be repaired by the Housing Works Agency, 246 will be repaired by subcontractors, and one is in a self-repaired basis.
Can you speak upon the answer to our minister's given to me? The date given by, if I heard correctly, the longest outstanding date is actually 28th of May. Can the minister confirm that there's no report prior to 28th of May, 28th of May, still pending to the carried out?
That's what I'm told, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Speaker, can the Honourable Lady come to something that you with me? If I can produce to her on behalf of the tenants that claims to have reported matters that require repairs dating way back to February, and there were matters that arose as a result of the services work for being carried out at Laguna State, and therefore problems that did not exist before. Now come in, water, cities, and so on, and the cities even showed me through graphic evidence and so on, claiming that the reports were made way back in February, you know, and as a concerned tenant, the summer months have helped to drive a little bit, but as soon as the first rainfall comes, you know, they're expecting a really pretty bad winter. You know, how can we ensure that the Honourable Minister has the total and correct updated information, unless I'm being misled by constituents? But certainly, you know, the repair seems to have been requested way before May of this year.
Because it may be that there is a case that has slipped. It may be that there is a mistake in the system, but if there is someone who has an outstanding report, then I'm happy for the Honourable Gentleman to give me the details and I'll look into it. It wouldn't be in a case like that a structural damage or anything significant like that, but the Honourable Gentleman needs to be mindful as well that from the beginning of the year, non-urgent work or non-fundamental structural work are not happening if the tenant is in arrears. It wouldn't be in the case where there is damage that would affect the integrity of the building and where you have an impact on a neighbour, but they say that someone wants new tiles because they've had that tile they've tried for a long time. If those people are in arrears and they've made a situation for the arrears, then people in arrears will not have non-urgent work undertaken for them until they pay the arrears, until they settle the arrears, unless they are, of course, themselves have a genuine reason for being in arrears. The Honourable Gentleman may recall, I mentioned this at my budget speech, and I've mentioned it before when we have discussed the arrears, and there was the agreement across the floor of the House that we would have support. And of course, this relates to people who don't pay rent because they don't want to pay rent, as opposed to people who can't pay rent.
Yes, indeed. I think the only religion I recall that I've always supported that, and except that his tenant wants to benefit of his rights as a tenant, in a way, to pay his commitments and pay the rent and so on. I may have got a bit confused before when the Prime Minister was trying to explain to me sort of the type of work and whether he's giving things or things upon an end and so on. From what I saw of the photographic evidence, this seems to be because of the services work being undertaken at Laguna, there is now a water ingress to the roof and down the walls and so on that wasn't there before. So that home has now for months, that keeps on increasing. And of course, again, the biggest concern is the wet weather. It's been approaching us, it's the water, the rain falls, and when it falls, that person really has a very serious and, in my opinion, a genuine concern. Because of the amount of water coming in, the amount of buckets coming to put around the house, and the amount of mops and crap that one has to go in order to soak up this water. And I sort of tried to explain to them before that that could be something that, I don't know, maybe the system is such that the report is made as far back as February. They have started to work upon it by reporting it to the constructor, so therefore, as far as the work pregnancy is kept after it's been taken upon. But now, in the last days of October, certainly as far as the tenants are concerned, the repairs have not been undertaken.
That is precisely what it is, Mr. Speaker, because now that the Honourable Gentleman has explained what the work done, I mean, they are attributable to the construction work, to the refurbishment. It will, those repair work, the remedial work will not be undertaken by the Housing Works Agency or the normal subcontractors. It will be referred to the contractor that is undertaking the refurbishment work, and that's why it's not in this project.
Yes, and just to make sure I don't give the lady the wrong impression, it's never referring to the use example of Laguna State. I can give her perhaps later on behind the speaker's chair in the name of the tenant. Tenant from Alameda State will be waiting for the chair, I think, last November. And it hasn't been started upon, so it doesn't fit into the category that was given being a minister with benefit of the doubt. But work is ongoing, therefore, it's not no longer satisfied by the funding to be done. So there has been 5 minutes over a cup of tea in the district, and we can update ourselves for the benefit of the tenants.
Question 604, the Honourable E.J. Hayes.
Minister for Housing provides details of all expenditure incurred so far this current financial year in respect of contracts awarded promoting empty homes suitable for relocation, stating to whom payments were made, how much has been paid, the number of residential homes pertaining to its payments, as well as indicating the type, scope, nature of repair works or cleaning services undertaken.
Answer the Honourable Minister for Tourism, Quality, Social Services and Housing.
Mr. Speaker, Avanti, £17,545 for two properties. Property Repairs Limited, £10,858 for one property. Liberty General Construction, £18,458 for two properties. Space Maintenance, £9,243 for one property. Sarah Jane Construction, £8,896 for one property, Ernest Lopez and Fund Limited, £12,031 for one property, Ace Planning, £13,370 for one property, Lovelo Group Construction, £11,396 for one property, J.I. Construction, £19,150 for one property. The works carried out by these companies are all generally refurbishment works, such as plastering, cutting walls, ceilings, taking down walls, painting, replacing floor tiles, doors, plumbing, electrical work.
Is the name one of them the 13,320 pounds, the name of the company was selling something. I automatically made them to the my brain probably went into this and see for the planning as well. But I know planning is most good question, and I think that 13,320 pounds worth of planning, that is supposed to be planning a very, very big quantity. Is it just the one little home, or because, you know, there's a whole series of everything like the block or for the sports and so on? But I don't know if I don't have any more information in that respect.
Well, Mr. Speaker, the name of the company is T.H. Plan. And, well, what these figures represent the establishment of homes, not necessarily, and it's not, because the name of the company is H. Plan. It doesn't mean that it's exclusively undertake planning it, it undertakes general repairs. So the figures have suggested what we, is our average for the repair and the establishment of H. Plan. It's not just for planning.
And I mean, in fairness to the 200 people, my question to them is for the same indication the type of nature we pair with, and the Honourable Minister has given to me, sort of like in a very collective sense for the same indication. Yeah. Perhaps for a future session, should I come up with this question, as you know, that I like to pose in at least quarterly or so, if it is possible, and if you provide information, the same for this expenditure, well, look, you know, more or less, so much was in respect of planning and so much in respect of the other one. It just gives us a better picture to see, because I know roof repair, for example, can be extremely expensive. Just the mere fact that packaging has to go up, we need to increase the price somehow. So some sort of breakdown might help, you know, not only the opportunity, but will help government tenants to better understand how money is being used for the establishment of the home.
Speaker, when the property is on the back, as the Honourable Member may know, it hasn't been governed, they're handed back in a certain state of disrepair. There is a standard set down by the Housing Administration, which I imagine was there before, it's not one that has been changed, which lays down to what level it has to be restored before it can be allocated. These properties are properties that come to me for, to me meaning to the people that are employed in town range to distribute it, and we can see from the list the policies to distribute it among the local companies that can handle that level of work, but nothing much bigger because they employ half a dozen people. And irrespective of the title, I mean, age planning is somebody that tends to have more plumbers than other things, but it doesn't mean they can't do anything unless it's planning. So if there is an old planning job, they are more likely to take it, but they can still take on a house that needs, retiling and replastering, and maybe, you know, doing something because they've taken the kitchen sink with them, or something else because they've taken the toilet with them, which other things that happen. But the actual level of work that is required is assessed by the landlord, the housing administration, and they determine the price, which, if it's above 2,000, which is normally above 2,000 for the establishment, is then given to the people in town range who get three quotes. It has to be below the figure that has already been determined as acceptable by the landlord. And out of those three quotes, the standard rule is that to give it to the lowest quote, unless there is only a couple of hundred pounds difference between the lowest and the highest, in which case we then look at which company is running out of work, because there is a dual purpose to this. One is to get the houses done and re-rent it, and the other is to keep people in jobs so that they don't get laid off. So in a sense, the distribution of the list is a reflection of those two policy objectives. One is that we give it to the, so they get value for money, the one that gives the best point, below the ceiling laid down by the housing, and the second is that when they're very close, we pay off enough. It is really, it isn't much that they can, that one can be much cheaper than over there. But there will be some people there that have got it, even though it might be a couple of hundred pounds higher than somebody else, simply because they're having other work. And they should talk about that.
Yes, and even though there was in my subsection C, under the assigned tenants, the tenants themselves, the one who's going to carry out that repair work. I was referring to the subsection C. The minister said that one tenant is going to carry out that repair work themselves. How are the expenses towards that repair settled? Is it that the tenant buys an material and gets it given for matching compensation as well as he provides his own labor, or is it some other formula? I'm just going to enlighten a little bit how we estimate or how we reach that separate estimate for both sides of the cost of that repair.
Because this is supplementary, not to this question, to another question. So generally, when it starts to come, the estimate of the housing rate agents in the calculate the value of the work from the student provided by white people in a 2 year or for them.
Question number 605. The Honourable Ms. M.D. Asanaon.
Is the government satisfied with the level of rent relief they are awarding at present?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Tourism, Equality, Social Services and Housing.
Mr. Speaker, yes. Mr. Speaker, there are many pensioners and people living on the edge, so we say, who consider the pennies off in rent relief, as I understand, in some cases, it is about 15 pence or 60 pence a month or 15 pence a week, something like that, really doesn't help in any significant way. So would the minister be willing to revise a policy, or is the housing ministry undertaking ever a case-by-case process to help those who feel that the rent relief awarded doesn't relieve much at all?
Well, no, Mr. Speaker, because the honourable lady starts from the wrong premise in that we're assuming that rent relief is only 15 pounds of the rent. The way rent relief is calculated actually is based on the income of the person. So if we're going to talk about figures, then I'm going to give the correct figures and put it in context. Because it's not that people have 15 rent relief. There is a formula to calculate on the fact that it's taken into account of the whole of the household income and life of status and whether the children living there or the person has a disability, because every case is assessed on a case-by-case basis and left with a limited individual. So, for example, if a single person were on the minimum welfare payment, the minimum income guarantee, then they would not pay rent. So the level of rent is connected to the income of the individual. And this is a policy that's been in place since 2007. But let's give another example. Let's say if there is a single pensioner who is on an income of, say, £400 a month, then their rent should be £11.40. So if we look at an average rent, a 3FAB in Glasgow has a monthly rent of £64, then we're talking about a rent relief of much more in excess of 15 pounds. It may be that the honourable lady has been given information by one individual, but that one individual doesn't represent the assistance that government provides by way of rent relief. And we look at the income, and we look at the scenario, and we look at the household income. I'm grateful for that answer, and I know that the honourable lady does a lot to help the vulnerable and the needy, because I've spoken to her about these situations before. But can I just ask, if
a member of the public comes to me and tells me that they really are finding it hard to pay their rent, and that the rent producer have been awarded, this doesn't make a difference to them. How would the Honourable Lady suggest I help that individual or those people? There are few people, not just one, but various, who have come to me with this situation or this issue that they have. Where could the Honourable Lady turn us to direct them in these cases? Well, Mr. Speaker, my advice is just look at the case as a whole, because maybe it needs to look at is the rest of the expenditure and not the rent relief, because the formula to assist the person by way of rent relief is already in place. So the rent relief for the person will definitely be commensurate to their income. So if someone is in a very low income, then their rent relief will be 100% because they don't have to pay any rent. But in fact, there is that there is a connection between the level of rent relief and the income that that person is receiving. So if the level of rent relief is low, then it's connected to the income, and it may be that that individual needs to look at other ways in which the income is distributed, because the relief is connected to the level of the income. And if someone is on a very low income, then rent relief is 100% and rent relief is zero.
Question number 606, the Honourable Ms. M.D. Hassanan.
What is the government policy on allowing parents who are separated and have agreed joint custody terms and conditions out of court in relation to housing requirements?
I will say the Honourable Minister for Health, for Tourism, Equality, Social Services and Health.
Mr. Speaker, joint custody is not a legal term since the introduction of the Children Act in 2009. What has to be referred to as joint custody is in law now parental responsibility. On separation, joint parental responsibility is not and never has been the test for determining entitlement to housing composition, as most parents will have this in any event. In cases of separation, the housing department requires that both parents have joint residence of the child in addition to joint parental responsibility. And if joint residence is established, then both parents are entitled to the same housing requirements for the child. Mr. Speaker, from what I understand, in this area, it seems that the law discriminates men in the sense that men actually need this shared residency order agreement, which the Honourable Lady has just mentioned, forcing them to have to go to lawyers and spend money to legally validate something that the mother gets naturally without having to provide this agreement. And I have evidence of this, which I'm happy to say in private, because obviously it comes from different sources and different individuals who have suffered this. Would the minister be prepared to accept that this policy needs changing and reviewing to make it more egalitarian? No, Mr. Speaker, because the policy is not as the Honourable Lady understands it to be. The policy applies to the child, and it relates to the parent who has the residence of the child. If parents separate and one parent has the residence of the child, then the parent with the residence of the child will be given the room for the child, because the room, the additional room, is for the child and not the parent. And it has never been the case that when parents separate, the child is accommodated in both dwellings. The child, there will be provision for the child to live with one parent or the other, but in exceptional cases, because it is an exceptional case where both parents have joint residence, not simply with joint custody, joint custody is a different concept. But if both parents have joint residence, then a room for the child will be allocated with each parent. So the policy is actually very egalitarian, but it is based on the arrangement that is made for the child. And I don't agree that lawyers need to become involved for evidence of that, because there's no, what I have said is that the policy is that the parties need to provide evidence. I haven't said that the parties need to provide court order, because in fact that was the position before. But because I don't believe that people should be spending money on lawyers, and I'm think that, and in fact, it goes against it in cases like this, particularly in cases like this, because the overriding objective of the Children Act is the no order principle. It would be quite contradictory for the housing department to be asking people to go to court where the framework of the legislation doesn't want you to go to court. So what I did in the housing department to facilitate the process was to ask for evidence, and evidence can be provided by way of a written statement, and the lawyer then to extend the court even to that. So, Mr. Speaker, in answer to the question, I think that the procedure, particularly the new procedure, is very fair.
Because this is a bugbear, this is certainly a bugbear with me, and I don't mind my saying that it was a bugbear when I was Minister for Justice and this arose at Cabinet. Because the Honourable Lady is right, it does discriminate invariably against men. It doesn't discriminate objectively against men in this sense, but of course, a man or a woman can have residency in respect of a child. And his or her spouse can then have contact. And effectively what the law does is afford either both parties joint residency, in which case there would be no problem, as the Honourable Lady has rightly pointed out, because both of them would be entitled to the same government housing. Or the law provides for one of them to receive residency in respect to the child, with the other spouse or the other parent receiving contact. Now, invariably, it's the mother the mother invariably obtains residence, it's the father that obtains contact. And in that kind of situation, you then have government housing will go to the mother. So if somebody is living, a couple are living in a three-bedroom flat, for example, the mother will take the government flat. Then the father has to look for alternative accommodation. The father cannot afford to obtain alternative accommodation. The state, the government, will afford a government property. But the government affords a one-bedroom flat or a studio flat for those fathers. And that is where, if you not agree, that the discrimination arises and the unfairness arises. But if you have a family, a large family, in a three or four RKD, it is unfair to then award the father to simply, who cannot afford private accommodation, let's not forget, a one-bedroom flat or a studio flat, where he's never going to be able to enjoy the contact with his children, because the children are never going to be able to stay overnight. It's impossible. And that is the unfairness, and that is what I would urge. And I've done so before to the Honourable Lady myself, for the unfairness to be considered by the government. And I have to say that these arguments are not new. I have already said that these are arguments that we had when we were in government, and I wasn't able to prevail upon my colleagues that the policy ought to be changed. But certainly, I urge the Honourable Lady to look upon this, because I certainly agree with the Honourable Lady that it is a discrimination of many people.
Mr. Speaker, when we're talking about government rentals, of which there is a limited amount available, then there needs to be a certain criteria that to ensure that there is an equitable distribution of rentals that are available. Now, if the housing stock is limited, and a child, because the allocation really isn't in respect of the child and the parent, it's because the parent is the consequence of the room allocated to the child. If a child lives with one particular parent for the majority of the time and will have contact with the other parent from time to time, so 1 night, 2 nights a week, then in the context of the limited housing stock available, that is the rationale for this policy. That is the basis, Mr. Speaker. However, having said that, there are always exceptions and avenues with individual cases which may be outside of the norm and also considered, because we do have the social avenue or the medical avenue which are open to people who necessarily may need to make different applications. One of the judgments said that it's difficult for someone who's allocated to studios and then has three or four children to enter that country. First of all, there are very few properties which have studios. The majority of them will be actually, and there are more two RKB, which is actually one bedroom, than there are one RKB, which is a studio. So it's very, very rare for people to have a studio, which is invited to one RKB and one RKB, in terms of an income reduction cycle, and those are also for kitchens. But if there is a choice, it's a situation where there is significant contact, and the parents have a lot of children, and they find it a situation, and in cases like that, they will be considered by the committee, and a view may be taken. But certainly, if someone has a child, and that child lives with another 5 days a week, if the government were to be providing a bedroom for every child whose parents are separated, then we have to double the housing stock that we provide, because we are providing double for that child. The view that is taken by the housing department, and as we saw, it's been taken by the housing department, as the honourable gentleman said, of course, in the context of the limited stock. And it is also consistent with the view that's taken by the court when it's necessary for the court to take a decision, and it's generally that the child lives with one parent. And that's the view of the court, and where the policy is then followed through by the housing department.
I have one further question in relation to that. And I know that the learning member friend that I've experienced with, for example, parental alienation syndrome, so the rest in the core of the separation and what happens when the children stay with the mother and the few gaps that work for them. But I think it's right that when the members still have an eye on that, because the number of instances of that occurring now, and men coming up to speaking to me about the lack of access, the lack of opportunity to spend time with their children, and the effect thereafter on those children that cannot really engage with their father. I think it's a really important fact. I think we should be looking at ways in which we can alleviate that problem by increasing the opportunities available for men in those situations to have further contact with their children in those other countries. And I know the only member knows that is now, but I appreciate that the banking exercise so far as the housing stock is concerned. But we may be dealing in the future with a generation of young children without proper access to their fathers, and seriously to the current generation, and something that I know the immigrant and I'm a bit aware of, who have come to me.
Yes, this is true, and it's precisely because of my practice and my experience in a former life that I have synthesized the procedure to help cases where it's possible, but as I said, we have to live in the position where we have the limited space. And if the space is limited, there is anything else that we can do. So it's all the constraints and relations to housing stuff. It may be with the future, but in the next few years, and because everything is fluid in the future, so in the next few years, when we complete the new affordable housing that we will be constructing, but because the housing stock availability changes, that the demand on the stock changes, and it may lead to a change in policy. Of course, when I am looking at my department, if I deal with the immediate issues, and I'm looking at medium-term planning and at long-term planning, because this issue is precisely the problem in the first. Which is actually really fortunate for somebody to go forward, and it's been that I need to bear in mind in terms of my long-term plan. And so far as my immediate situation, I am concerned by the steps that is available to me.
Question number 607, the Honourable Ms. M.D. Hassan Nawan.
Does the government not think it is time to migrate drug addiction issues from the Social Services Ministry to the Health Ministry?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Tourism, Quality, Social Services and Health.
No. Mr. Speaker, I noticed from a press release in today's Chronicle an inter-ministerial committee to take up work of studying possible changes to drug policy in the Gibraltar. Can I ask how often will this team be meeting?
Well, so I'm going to be the chairman of that committee, and I wanted to meet with is allowed to go, but we didn't know that I was to do much of the court myself, but it was serving the context of the statement I made to the House last weekend, the reshuffling. It's not going to be possible for me to take the portfolio, but I want to stay involved with the issues, and the committee will also have the honourable minister for care
panelists as well, so I would we meet every Monday, but as a committee we'll probably be meeting once a month, I imagine.
What major changes will be on the agenda, and what is the timeline expected in the delivery of any changes?
I think it's definitely a reason that we can ask this after we've met for the first time. I think could share ideas with her here, etc. Although I don't think question time is for that sort of discussion, and I'm quite happy to also have a discussion with her on whatever she may have. And if she wants to come to the committee on a particular day and give us her views or things that we might be prepared to consider whether it's going to be relevant, of course, we'd be happy to do so, or to write to me with those ideas. And I'm quite happy to consider anything which could be of assistance to me in this respect.
If I can just start back to the original question, I just wanted to ask the World Health Organization, they talk about drug addiction issues being health issues. It's considered a mental, psychological, and physical illness, and there's plenty of evidence from the WHO to suggest this. So when one of the ladies said no, is it something that won't be moved at all? Will they not consider this evidence from the WHO and perhaps think about the possibility of migration such an issue to health?
I think I noticed the lady that the distribution portfolio is down to the Chief Minister, and I determined that it should not be included in the amalgamation, the initial amalgamation of areas related to care, which is not only associated with Mr. Foster, dealing with all of the areas of care, but not the drugs, although he is going to be involved in the internal serial committee. And I am persuaded that the health services have a role to play. That's why I created the internal serial committee and the Minister of Care will be part of that internal serial committee. I am not persuaded that it should not be a separate ministerial responsibility to deal with these aspects, or the many connected aspects of issues that relate to the abuse of drugs. And that at the moment is not going to be something that changes. If it could be that involved over the work that we do together, it appears that there is more work to be done in respect of the control of the abuse of drugs and its misuse, and then it is from the health point of view, even from the justice point of view, or the independent portfolio point of view, but at the moment, this is something that's made a week ago.
Question number 608, the Honourable Ms. M.D. Hassan Nam.
Would the government agree that detoxification of drugs should be stopped being undertaken at ocean views and carried out in British farms?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Tourism, Equality, Social Services and Health.
No. Mr. Speaker, for many of my conversations with many ex-drug addicts and their families, it normally takes weeks for a transfer between these two places, and there is a lot of time lost in a system that at present is not cohesive and not what is and what is needed is a system that encourages the addict to get treated immediately instead of wasting time in an environment that is not bespoke to the needs of the addict. Only to have to face a new challenge weeks later when they have lost much time. In light of this, is there anything that the Minister would consider in terms of changing the process? Mr. Speaker, there's different issues here. The issue of the question being asked is whether detoxification should take place at Vicious Farm instead of at Ocean View. Mr. Speaker, detoxification from drugs from someone who is a drug abuser is a very serious matter. It needs to be done and undertaken in a safe clinical setting at the Ocean View. Vicious Farm is not a clinical setting, it is a rehabilitation facility, which is more of a psychotherapeutic setting. But we cannot have a spot that provides for one thing, provides providing in service, which is complex and medical, and which is provided by the government elsewhere, particularly given that this is done as a threat. Imagine if someone is being beaten, even if they have the structure and the staff, which of course in Uzbekistan, the staffing there is related to the service that's provided. It's not a clinical service, it's not a hospital, it's not a nursing facility. It's a rehabilitation center, it's a therapeutic rehabilitation center, but they're different types of rehabilitation centers. And in fact, I have visited various rehabilitation centers, and in none of those rehabilitation centers is the ESOC facility part of the rehabilitation facility. They are two separate functions. But let's imagine for the moment that we were to have the infrastructure, the nursing and the medical supervision that we have in HMD at a busy time. Can you imagine if the CCD were to have an emergency at a busy time, having to send for that person to hospital in the middle of the night from the upper ward? We have to get the ambulance up there and then the ambulance back down. But the reason why it's not done with the CCD is because detox is complex. There can be people who have multiple addictions. They can be addicted to more than one substance, and really it is to drugs and alcohol together, which makes research more complicated. And it's therefore important that we have it in a setting that has the adequate clinical supervision to ensure detoxification is undertaken safely for the patient. In that case, is the minister therefore satisfied, as you said, at present, OCD is the apt place to cater for the detox process, or does he believe that more can be done at British funds to provide a better and more bespoke environment for the detoxification person? Because I believe that detox needs to be prospected and needs to be provided in a medical facility with clinical supervision, and British funds is not that facility.
People, I do have a question that straddles those 6, those 7, and 6, 8, and 9, and 10, and 11. Thank you. Because I'm a scientist on therapy, also meeting, because I have a supposed that the house now is done, and perhaps we take that for a couple of months tomorrow, which can be the floor of the government, at 2 p.m. tomorrow afternoon. I'll bring now again to tomorrow afternoon at 2.